So I just got back from a week of junior high camp down at Sciokamo, and it was an awesome week. A lot of cool stuff happened. One of the things that we always do at camp, we call family groups. So we spend time in youth group, you know, with our own church, but we also do these things called family groups. And that is when we take a couple students from this church and a couple students from this church and a couple students from that church, and we put them together, and they have to do different things. It looks different every year. There's usually an aspect of, you know, they answer some questions together. This year, we did some group activities where they had to work together and communicate to get something done. Our theme this year was walk. And so each activity kind of reflected that theme. And one of the things that we did, we took some 2x6s and we cut them into 2-foot sections. And we handed each group about 4 pieces of lumber. So what they would do, myself and a partner, we would take a board, and they'd hold it like this, up in the air, and then the next pair would do the same, and they'd create kind of a ladder with these 4 pieces of wood, right? There's about 10 to 12 people in each group, and so 8 people are holding a board. The other 3 or 4 have to walk across those boards and make their way down. You could rotate in and things like that. Some groups, they did it different ways. Some groups, if me and my pair were right here, after the first person stepped off, if we were the first ones in line, they would then come to the front of the line, become the 5th rung in a sense, and hold it out, and so on and so forth. One group came to me and told me that they were able to do 30 steps doing that. 30 times someone was able to go from one board to the next while the group held it up. No one tripping, no one getting confused, communication working together and all this stuff. It's pretty cool. These are junior high students who have known each other a couple of days at the most, right? They might have a partner with them from their church, but they're from different cities, different states in some cases, different backgrounds, different ages, all these different things. But when they work together, they accomplish something pretty cool. That's a pretty good reflection of how the church is designed to be, right? A lot of us are different. We come from different places. We have different interests and ideas. But we all work towards this common goal, hopefully. So what is that goal? What is the church designed to do? Why do we come here? We have it actually up on the wall as a reminder each week. It's in Matthew 28, verse 19 and 20. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe everything I've commanded you, and surely I'm with you always to the end of the age. It's pretty simple. The goal of the church is to make disciples who make disciples. That's why we come. That's what we do. We're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, if you want to turn there. I'm going to read here in just a minute. Paul lays out in this section, this illustration, he talks about the body and how the church is designed to reflect kind of how a body works. There's different parts. All of them have different functions, but they work together as one. It's kind of a lengthy passage. I'm going to read from verse 12 to 26, and then we'll go back and take it a section at a time. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all were made to drink of one spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor, and our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty. which our more presentable parts do not require, but God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but all the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. There's three principles that Paul kind of lays out in this section about teamwork, about working together, about the church, all striving towards one goal. And the first principle is this: kingdom work requires everyone. In verse 14, he goes into this illustration: for the body does not consist of one member, but of many. And then he talks about the foot and the hand and the eye and the ear and all these different parts. See, the work of the church, to make disciples, that's a tall task. It's a big job, and it needs everyone to make it happen. And if I can speak frankly with you for a minute, we have too many people who are on the sidelines watching other people work and not doing their part. See, God has designed you with specific abilities and talents and interests and experiences that make you a vital part of what we are trying to do. And we need your contribution to make it happen. There's a couple things before we move on. A couple things that we have to remember. Whenever everyone works together, some issues can come up. I know that shocks you, that in the church sometimes not everyone is perfect, but that is in fact the case. So, two things before we move on to the second principle. Whenever everyone works together, especially with this large of a group of people, whether it's that amount or even a few, there's always going to be some conflict. So, two things to remember. When everyone works together, forgiveness is required. There's going to be people who offend you that you're working alongside. There are going to be people who say things and who do things that are going to hurt you, probably. They're going to do things maybe differently than you would do them, differently than they've done in the past, even. But if we remember the mission and we remember that ultimately the only thing that matters is that goal of making disciples, it becomes easier to forgive those people when they harm us, or to accept forgiveness when we harm them. The other thing that has to happen whenever people work together is patience. This one's hard. Sometimes whenever I ask people to do things or delegate a responsibility and I sit back and watch, it is hard not to step in and question why things are done the way that they are. I like to do things the way I like to do them. And so whenever I see a task happening or a project being done that is done differently than how I would do it, it's hard to just not micromanage and just let it happen. But almost every time that happens, the job gets done anyway. And most of the time, it probably gets done better than it would have had I stepped in and tried to do it my way. So whenever we work together, we have to remember patience with one another and forgiveness. The second principle that Paul lays out down in verse 21 is this idea that kingdom work is all important. No job is any greater than another. Something that might seem small is vital because it takes everyone working together. Verse 21 says, "The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I have no need of you,' nor again the head to the feet, 'I have no need of you.' On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable." I have changed one diaper in my lifetime. It was my niece. She will soon be old enough that she will not have to wear diapers. And until I have kids of my own someday, possibly, my plan is to never change another diaper. However, there are people within the church who would love to change your kid's diaper. We have people who are in the nursery every day who do that sort of thing, who will wipe the nose of your kid and do it with a great big smile on their face because they just enjoy doing that sort of thing. Whether it is that job or whether it is making coffee or wiping off of a table or doing things that may seem like they're in the background and that people don't notice, you need to know that we are appreciative of that, and we probably don't tell you that enough. In any area that you serve in, we are grateful for that, but not only that, It's not trivial. It matters. It's very important because we're all working towards that same goal. You're not just filling a communion tray or changing the slides on a screen or wiping off of a table. What you're doing contributes to the greater mission of making disciples. It's important and it matters. John Wooden was a basketball coach for UCLA in the 60s and 70s. He is not only the greatest basketball coach of all time, he is just the greatest coach in any sport of all time. People might try to argue for someone else, but those people are wrong, and you don't need to listen to them. He won 10 national championships in his time, including 7 in a row. No other team has ever won more than 2 in a row. Not only that, his leadership principles, and he developed this thing called the Pyramid of Success. Businesses and Fortune 500 companies still use a lot of that to this day. He's just a tremendous leader and man, or he was. One of the keys to his success, one of the things that made his teams so good, was that early on in his career, he implemented this idea with his team that whenever someone would pass the ball to another person on the team and they would score, if I was the person that scored the basket, as I'm running back on defense, I was required to point to the person who would pass me the ball as a show of, hey, we're in this together. I might have got the box score of 2 points, but you were the one that helped me get there. Dean Smith was another coach at this time, very good coach at North Carolina. He liked this idea so much, he took it and took it a step farther, actually. He would have his players point to maybe someone who set a screen for a person driving, or even if, you know, a really good cut was made that drew the defense away and opened up the lane. All these things that aren't going to show up in the box score, and maybe if you're not a really big fan of basketball, you don't even notice them as they're happening. But it was all acknowledgement of, hey, it takes 5 people to score. It takes the whole team, starters and on the bench, to be a good team, and that's why his teams were successful. If you watch any basketball game now at any sort of high level, college or NBA, it still happens, not because Wooden and Dean Smith are coaches anymore, but just it has been built into the culture of basketball. It's just something that players do now. It's the idea that there is no small job. The person that comes off the bench and plays 2 minutes is still giving rest to a starter. He's still contributing, even if his name doesn't show up in the box score. And every job that we do here is important and matters because it goes towards the goal of making disciples as we all work towards that. The third principle we see in verse 26, it says, if one member suffers, all suffer together. And if one member is honored, all rejoice together. I love that clip we showed earlier. It's from the movie Coach Carter. If you've never seen it, I will kind of give you some background as to what has led up to that clip. It's based on a true story, and Coach Carter comes in and he coaches this team that is in the projects, I think, of Chicago. I can't actually remember the city. It might not be Chicago. But he tries to teach them more than just basketball. He's teaching them about life and how to succeed off the court. And so he has some pretty strict guidelines that he sets for the team. And Cruz, the member of the team who looked like he had just been drenched in sweat and could barely, you know, run down the court, he had quit earlier. But he came back and he wanted to be back on the team. And so the requirements that he had to meet that Coach Carter set for him were this. He had to do 2,500 push-ups, and 1,000 suicides. Which a suicide is like you run down the free throw line and back, and then you run to half court and back, and then the other free throw line and back. They're hard. That's why they're called suicides. And he had to do this all by Friday. He had 1 week to do this task that was basically impossible. That's why Coach Carter gave him that job. And the cool part about the clip is he asks the manager who's been keeping track, you know, where's he at, and he reads off the numbers of how close he got. It's actually pretty impressive, the amount of work he was able to do. But he didn't reach the goal. And as you see in the clip, as he's walking off, one of his teammates steps up and reminds the coach of what he said. You know, he said that we're a team, and if one of us fails, we all fail. And if one of us triumphs, we all triumph. And that is true if you've been around sports in any way, if you've played, or if you've had a child that has played, and you had a coach that was worth anything as a coach, they have told you that before. You win and lose as a team. And that is not only true on the court or on the field, that is true of the work we do of the church. See, the third principle is this, that kingdom work is won and lost together. Our mission, our goal of making disciples, of reaching the lost, we will succeed or we will fail as a church. The church is God's plan A to reach a lost world. And there's not a plan B. There is no Calvary coming afterwards if we fail. God designed it the way he did, that before he comes back, it is our job to reach as many people as possible. And frankly, we're not doing a very good job. In a couple weeks, we have VBS. VBS is always an awesome time. It's great. Kids come in worship. They get to hear the gospel. They get to hear many different Bible stories, and they'll raise money, and they will even do some work, as Terry talked about earlier, to provide food for some kids who are less fortunate. And so it's going to be a great week. It's always a fun time. But my favorite part of VBS actually has nothing to do with kids. My favorite part of VBS is to kind of sit back and watch as all of you guys do all the different jobs that it takes to pull VBS off. Most of the jobs aren't fun. Most of the jobs are frustrating, and everyone comes together and does them without complaining or without any sort of hesitation. Not only that, if you're not here working during the week, many people contribute by, you know, donating food or donating items that we need. People come beforehand to decorate and get projects done that need to be completed before the week starts, all that sort of thing. And it really does take the whole church to pull VBS off. And like Terry said, we do that really well. Every year, there's no doubt in my mind that VBS is going to be a success because of all of you and all the work that we put into it. If you're going to be here that week, I want you to kind of do the same thing. Take a second just to step back and kind of watch as everyone does their job and everyone does their role happily and with a servant's heart. And then I want you to imagine what our church would look like if we operated like that the other 51 weeks of the year. What would Nevada look like if we operated like that the other 51 weeks of the year? How many lost people could we bring in the doors and make disciples out of? I'll close with this. I told you I was at camp. We did a different thing this year. We called it a sponsor auction to raise money for missions. So what we did, different people offered different things. Some of them offered to like have a pizza party for a group instead of what we were having for dinner that night. Or they could, we had a movie night so they could watch it during that movie. Some offered ice cream, different things. Some people did embarrassing stuff. One sponsor just stood there and let someone shoot them 10 times with a paintball gun, which was pretty awesome. And we did all these different things. And what was really cool was that it wasn't just like a one person deal, right? So like if the bids got up to $20 or $30, most students didn't have that much money with them by themselves. And so what they would do, a group of like four or five friends would pool their money, because some stuff got up to like $80, right? So like one of the pizza parties, a couple large pizzas and like a 2 liter and popcorn went for like $100 or something crazy. I can't remember. 200 actually, yeah. I don't know. It was crazy. There were some crazy numbers out there. But anyway, what was cool to see, there was one time specifically where it was like a group of five or six people were all bidding on it. And they're like, oh, we're out of money. And there was another group of like five or six people all bidding on it. And then you would see like two people that weren't even sitting with them, like that probably didn't even know each other. They're like, hey, if we go in with you guys, we'll put our money together. We can outbid them and blah, blah, blah. And it went back and forth. Together, 120 middle school students raised over $2,000 for our mission, which was IDES. It's an international disaster relief organization. They do things in different countries, and whenever a disaster happens, they come in and give support. We never set a goal, but usually at that week of camp, $1,000 is pretty good. $1,500 would have been exceptional. We would have been really happy with that. $2,000 blew us all away. I mean, we had no idea that that would happen. But whenever God's people come together and work towards one common goal, some pretty awesome stuff can happen. God, we thank you that you give us each different assignments within this church. God, you give us talents and abilities to work for your kingdom. And God, you have placed a heavy responsibility on us to reach lost people with your message, with your hope, with your grace and your mercy. God, we thank you for Jesus and his willingness to go to the cross for us so that we could be one with the Father again. God, we pray all these things in his name. Amen.